Hey everyone, just before the episode starts, I'm just letting you know we were very fortunate enough to be on the Filmian podcast. Thanks again to those guys for having us on. We duked it out on the UFC episode, Final Draft versus Filmian. There were some great questions. It was a lot of fun. So yeah, if you're interested, go check out the show notes. I'll play a little clip. And then we'll start the podcast. So yeah, thanks guys. And thanks again to Filmian podcast for having us on. It was a lot of fun. And we hope you enjoy it. All right, cheers.
So let's look at Tom Hanks, right? Tom Hanks is Walt Disney. I'm trying to think of things to tear him down with.
You can't. That's the thing. That's what
you
want.
It's Tom Hanks. You can't do that.
He's not going to be talking. He's going to be drawing his fucking mice all the time, isn't he? He's not going to be any fun to talk to.
Those mice are animation's sweethearts. How dare you? All right? That man made Disneyland. Have you ever been to Disneyland? It's amazing.
No.
I can't believe we're having this discussion. And it's Tom Hanks. Everyone loves Tom Hanks. Yeah, he might be a Nazi, but, you know, no one's perfect.
Wait, Tom Hanks is a Nazi, or Walt Disney's a Nazi?
Whoa.
I'm going to say either or.
It depends what
conclusion.
Yeah, it depends what subreddit you read.
Like someone's got they're a bit congested, or they've got a dry mouth. You just like hear it.
Oh no, I don't want that. Keep the gain levels down. You don't have to kick your snivelling.
You know when you're hearing someone do like public speaking, and you can hear they're like they need to cough, they need to like clear their throat, but they're not doing it.
They're not doing it.
They kind of go like this a bit, and they're like, yeah, just like talking. And
you're making me cough. Fucking hell, that's horrible. No, totally, though. I don't want to fucking snivel the whole episode, but we've got the case of the summer cold, and it is boiling everywhere.
I'm dying.
There's no escape, Alex.
Yeah, this is the end.
I dread to think what it's like in like the big cities like London or like Manchester or something like that. It must be absolutely boiling.
Oh, God. It just would, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
Lovely.
Oh, I need a fart.
Don't do that.
Oh my god.
Did he peek on the fucking mic? I didn't hear it.
I saw it on the WAV file.
That's horrible.
That is getting...
Dirty, dirty boy.
That is getting edited out.
No, it's not.
If I remember. Should we just start the fucking show?
Yeah, let's just start it. Yeah, there's no better way. We've talked about sweat. We've talked about... farts.
I farted, yeah.
Feeling horrible.
It's a gross, icky episode of the Final Draft podcast. Welcome back. It's me, Alex Knox, who's my co-host.
Adam, hello again.
Hello. Double Features back, hello. Baby. Back with a vengeance. two films. Two interesting films, as always.
So
always.
So thrilled. I love it.
I love it. I love movies. Okay.
Oh, God.
Is it my go?
It's an interesting choice this week.
Yeah.
I guess so.
I think it's my turn. Okay. Let's just fucking jump into it.
I loved your recommendation this week, I must admit.
Yep. Plucked a viewer suggestion. Thank you for the suggestion, as always. If you want to hear us talk about something, send us a message on Twitter, Instagram, drop in the Discord. There's a whole channel where you can suggest films for us to watch.
We're still waiting on the Shrek trilogy. That's still in the works.
Never say never.
Yeah, no. Fair point.
Clueless, 1995 classic. I was going to say cult classic, but it's not a cult classic, and I'll talk about why it's not. Yeah, one of the kind of classic 90s rom-coms, I guess, high school drama, dare I say chick flick.
No, I think that's fair. It's a bit like kind of like Mean Girls-esque, isn't it?
It's in a lineage of these kind of girly high school movies, which
is why we're giving it a 5-star.
Well, actually, I'll be honest.
No.
I do have a kind of soft spot for this genre of the chick flick. I think there's actually an artistry to the chick flick. as silly as it sounds. And I think Clueless.
No, I agree. It has its place and it does it.
Yeah.
There are good ones and there are bad ones. And
exactly. And Clueless is definitely one of the better ones. It's definitely the one people, I think, go to. Yeah, it is a classic movie. And not a cult classic. I mean, kind of a cult classic. I'm skeptical to call it a cult classic, although some people refer it to as one of those. But cult classics are typically films that weren't successful when they come out and then find a second audience in home releases or something like that. And with Clueless, it actually did really well. which was kind of
that doesn't surprise me, to be honest.
Doesn't surprise me either, to be honest. It had a budget of, we don't normally talk numbers, but had a budget of 12 million and grossed 56 mil.
Is that it?
At the US box office. Yeah, it was a pretty tiny movie.
Then again, 12 mil for the 1990s is, it's not a low amount.
It's not low.
It's quite big.
Yeah. You'd be surprised at how expensive like comedies are, because they're not shooting a lot of the time. You know, they don't shoot on sound stages or whatever. They're shooting like out and about, and that's just that like bumps up the price. But yeah, Clueless follows a high schooler called Cher and her kind of quest to enlighten her soul, I guess.
Fuck me.
She kind of takes a journey to do more good in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, and spread some positivity, even if it is a little misguided, and kind of follows her. You know, her high school trouble. She's one of the most popular girls in the school. She's got a group of friends. There's a lot of interesting fashion choices in this film, which we'll talk about.
It's not a thing I thought you were going to bring up, but cool.
and I think why it's kind of stood the test of time, weirdly, is that it is very... It does what it does very well, you know, of the high school movie. It's very... got a lot of memorable lines and moments... and I think at the core of it is a kind of good story. I didn't know this, but it's adapted from Jane Austen. It's an adaptation of Emma by Jane Austen. Yeah, which is another kind of story about a kind of upper class person taking in a kind of girl who's rough around the edges and making her more presentable, I guess, for male attraction. And I think...
Brilliant.
Because... And I think like it's more of a riff on that kind of idea, but a writer and director, Amy Heckling, kind of spoke about how she didn't really realize when she made this that it was kind of that's kind of what she was drawing on. And then when she was reflecting on the project, she kind of realized like, oh, this is just like Emma. And then that went further to influence the film. But yeah, before I get into all of it, Adam, what did you think of it? Would you rate it? What do you think?
Well, I think you've kind of nailed it in terms of these kind of films have their own section in cinema. You know, they have their own world, and there are definitely good and bad ones. And I actually kind of enjoyed it because I knew what it was. When you said Clueless originally, I thought it was some sort of like drama thriller, because I've heard the word Clueless. I was like, where have I heard that? I thought it was like a police thriller drama, like a crime. And yeah, well, it certainly wasn't that. So I loaded it up and I was like, oh no. I was like, oh no, it's a rom-com. But it was surprisingly charming. I hate to say it, but like, it had its moments. There was some, you know, I had it over some dinner. I chuckled a bit. But overall, it was just kind of like, you have your own movies that you like. And I can't say that this genre really speaks to me as an audience member. I did try my best to go in quite impartially, but at the end of the day, it's a film about a teenage girl's story through high school, which, as you know, we're not from America, and I think the whole high school, middle school life in America cinema is very romanticized, as far as I'm aware.
Absolutely.
I think I remember watching a lot of this kind of stuff just diegetically as a kid because of my older sister, and so I got an idea to what like secondary school was going to be like in a weird way, like some like weird expectation to this kind of life that you get like in college for us and secondary school, which is obviously nothing. You know, you look to something like The Inbetweeners and you get an idea to what secondary school's like in sixth form and whatever.
I guess, in a way.
So in a way, but overall, it's kind of like, you know, it's very hard, I think, for UK audiences to relate to exactly how these movies pan out with their characters, you know.
I guess so. But I'd also say that, like, I think you've kind of tapped into something that I wanted to talk about with this, where there's something about American high school as, like, a genre.
It's almost iconic, isn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of... it's almost mythic, I would even say.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah, because it's kind built of a, itself over yeah, time, really.
It's kind of a it's kind of a modern kind of archetype of a teenage experience, and has its own tropes and signifiers, you know, of the high school genre, which as Brits we don't necessarily relate to, and I'm sure even high schoolers in America would be like, yeah, that's nothing like what high school's like. But it's definitely a heightened reality. You know, and I think that's something, and when I say there's an artistry to the to this kind of type of film, that's kind of what I mean. Like, I think you're presenting a world that is kind of hyperbolic, and that's reflected in, I guess that's reflective of their characters and their mindsets, but also, yeah, those kind of wider things that touch audiences. And when we think of, you know, the high school movie, these kind of ideas that our minds go to, I think Clueless is definitely up to that on some level. And rewatching it, what I'd forgotten about it is that it's completely a satire. It's completely satirical.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And at times I find a very funny film, like a very, and it's meant to be. It's 100% a comedy. And I kind of forgot that about it. You know, I kind of remember thinking, like, because I've seen this film quite a few times actually, and I do love it. And yeah, it was really sticking out to me this time.
It's the last movie. The last movie I'd expect for you to be like, yeah, do you know what? I love this.
Cause
and it's not a bad thing. It's just crazy.
It's, well, you know, I think it just fully knows what it is. And
definitely.
You know, when Amy Heckling was kind of presented with the project, initially it was going to be like a TV show.
Wasn't it a TV show?
Well, they made a TV show after the fact, but it was going to initially be, she wrote it initially as a pilot. And she was kind of begrudgingly doing it. She didn't want to do it because I think she's done a few high school movies before this. And I think she was kind of fed up with the idea of doing an earnest high school, you know, romance drama thing. And I think that's where the satirical nature of it comes from. And she said, like, the initial concept was, you know, she wrote a character who was always happy regardless of what happened.
Yeah,
you can see that in the DNA of it. It's very satirical, you know, the little ways in which the characters are, you know, clueless to their lives. And again, it is hyperbolic, but that kind of, like, those kind of weird teenage obsessions you have with fashion and, you know, boys or girls and popularity and all this stuff and the trivial nature of it all. And I think that's kind of at the core of Clueless, I suppose, you know?
No, that's a beautiful way of putting it, in all fairness.
Yeah, and I think that's why it works. I think that's why, like, I really do love it.
Yeah.
I think it fully knows what it is. I think that it does lose a bit of steam towards the end and, you know, the whole romance element of it, I'm not so into. But when it's being just a full-on, like, kind of pastiche of, you know, high schoolers, I'm like, yeah, this is fucking funny, you know? Like, it's tried and true. There's so many movies and cartoons and TV shows and whatever that are doing the same thing. You know, youth is a very easy thing to poke at.
Definitely. I love that you spotted on the fact that it does feel like a satire, because say what you want about these movies and this genre of films, but this film was actually, like, really, like, it was well written. Like, the dialogue in this film wasn't, it fulfilled its purpose and kind of went a bit beyond it as well, more than it had to, because it was a satire. There was a charm to that. I was, you know, listening to the way that they wrote the dialogue between the characters, and albeit, you know, not the most difficult kind of thing to produce in terms of its setting, it actually kind of nailed that satire feel really well. And the acting was, like, spot on for it as well. Everyone kind of, like, knew their characters and knew exactly how to, like, react in the way their characters would. Mm-hmm. So I was spotting all these elements and I was like, this is kind of weird, because, like, they've nailed quite a lot of this. It's a very solid film for what it is. And it really shocked me, because I expected to kind of tune off, as you do if you watch something that you feel is a movie that you'd possibly put on if you're falling asleep, or one of those proper Netflix kind of time passes. And this just felt a little bit more than, it definitely felt more than that. I definitely went in with a preconceived idea. I was like, why on earth is this rom-com being suggested to us? This is a complete troll. You know, like something like Mean Girls, for example, that's also labeled as like a satire, but I don't feel like that was when I watched it, because it really sold on a lot of the cliches of that genre and knew exactly what it wanted to do. Whereas this, I felt, was a little bit, in terms of the way it was written, more kind of reflective of the genre. And you could tell that the director had possibly have done some of like actual ones within this genre before. I've been left kind of speechless. It's weird. I think where this movie falls a little bit flat is the things like the romance. Because when you're doing a satire, it's really hard to balance all of the elements in the respectable ways. Romance, anyway, is a very difficult avenue to go down. But the whole like Paul Rudd thing and their romance, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I just felt like it was weird and unnecessary for the story.
I guess. And I was just, yeah.
No, you I know do, what I mean? Like,
I do feel similarly.
Think it could have been.
I think it's weird.
I don't want to make some huge debate about it because, you know, it's
no, it's probably not worthy
of the film.
Yeah. I do get what you
but
mean.
But it was weird.
It does kind of, it feels like a bit of an off note for me, that the fact that it ends and it's like, and you know, it's cliche. It is what it is. Like, again, this film, as much as I think it is a satire, it is also having the cake and eating it too, where, you know, it ends and they've all got boyfriends and girlfriends and they're all happy.
Well, I felt like the more interesting narrative within it was the one at the beginning where they set up the teachers, which then wasn't addressed till like right at the end when they got it all went well. I was expecting that to like backfire, like maybe they would, you know, I thought the whole story was going to be she makes them two teachers hook up or whatever, and then has this kind of realization that she's not who she wants to be, and maybe the teachers end up realizing that it wasn't each other who was sending each other notes or whatever, and then it backfires, and then she realizes, oh, I'm a bit of an arsehole or something, or I've now changed this friend of ours to something she's not.
Well, they still do that, though. That still is what
but
they do in the story.
But the whole teacher thing, yeah, but the more interesting narrative was not her love interest, but how she affects others.
Yeah, but that's what it. No, because the film. I disagree.
Whole relationship.
The film is about her exploration of, you know, the teacher thing is just planting the seed of her trying to do these nice things, but ultimately she doesn't for her own selfish reasons because she wanted
fair
better
enough.
Grades and
yeah,
whatever.
That's true.
And you know, with the Thai character, that's reflected. You know, that she's thinking she's doing her a favor by making her, you know, this kind of. You know, evil kind of prissy, popular girl. And then it backfires on her.
Yeah, it only backfires in that respect, though. I was expecting, like, the teacher thing to backfire as well. It only felt like one thing in her life had kind of failed a bit, and it was like, oh, it's a disaster.
Well, I mean, it is a kind of cheap and cheery high school movie, you know?
I know!
If it
was
like all these decisions...
I'm just saying, you know?
If all these decisions made her life crumble around her, I don't know. I don't think that would be very good.
No, I know, but like, I felt that was like I wanted to know more about, like, I know it was like a setup, but I was like, I'm much more interested in that than fucking her relationship with Paul Rudd, that I felt also kind of came out of nowhere.
It was also
a bit weird because they're like related in a weird way as well, and also the age difference.
I mean,
like they kind of they brush over the fact she's like, oh no, we wouldn't get married. I'm only 16. It's like, yeah, well, there's also other things that you shouldn't be doing if you're 16, let alone getting married with fucking Paul Rudd in this film. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like I was like, 18, that's so 19, weird.
Yeah. It is a bit weird.
It brushed me like the whole like wrong way, and I was like, well, that's disappointing because I expected a better end to this film that I didn't expect to get anything from, and for a while I was quite annoyed about that, to be honest.
I guess
I should have been.
I guess the thing that rubs me weird with the Paul Rudd romance thing is that I don't necessarily dislike them as a this sounds so stupid.
Here we go.
I don't dislike
them
as
so much, man.
I don't dislike them as a couple or whatever. I think like, oh yeah, that's fine, you know. He's the person that caused her introspection, and you realize that they had a lot of chemistry actually.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it works.
Yeah,
The thing that makes the thing that rubs me weird about it is that, like, again, how like this her solution was, oh, I'm in love with this guy actually. Like, there's no like truer sense of self-realization, which maybe is part of the satire, but I think that's where the film I think that's where the film kind of drops the ball in terms of the satirical elements, where like it ends with, like I said, it ends with everyone at the wedding, and they've all got boyfriends and girlfriends, and they're all happy, and It's like, okay, yeah, sure, fine. It's not my, yeah, that's not the,
yeah.
There's the stuff I really love about the film is the school stuff and like their little, you know, all their little lingo and just some great, yeah, like little lines of comedy and visual comedy too. That are like scattered throughout. I guess I can see why you would be drawn to the teacher plot, I guess, because I do love that guy. I can't remember, I don't know the actor's name, but he's very well-known.
I know you're talking about
comedic actor, and I love him. I love the teacher.
I thought they
so
were
much.
Both like great, you know, and I was like, it's a shame that you do spot on other teachers like the PE teacher and stuff throughout it, but more or less you don't really know too much about the school, and that's not a actual comment on it, I mean just in general. Yeah, I don't want to like grill it too much because I do understand what it is. It makes you realize how it reminded me of the reflection of, you remember how silly certain things was in school, like you'd see all these problems that the characters are having and the way they talk and like the things that were really important in their life and the schedule of it all, you know, like they would go to school and then they just spend the rest of the day fucking making sandwiches and sitting on sofa watching TV.
Yeah, and going shopping
and all of this. So there's that element to it, which is always quite fun. But it did it in a way that was a satire as well. It made fun of those things.
Yeah.
Which, as opposed to the other films, which is like a general reflection, and you're like, well, hang on a second, you're not making fun of this, and this is ridiculous because this is how no one is in school. You know, you're building on those tropes that have been written into this kind of high school film nature.
Mm-hmm.
I went for a little while when me and my stepsister moved into a new home. We promised each other that we were going to watch series and stuff like in the evenings after like school, whatever. And we were like, right, we get to recommend one thing. I can't remember what series I recommended, but I think it was overthrown by her recommendation anyway, which was she wanted to watch the entirety of 90210.
Right.
And because I had fuck all else to do and I made that promise, I sat through a lot of it. I don't remember any of it particularly, but I remember how those tropes were like accentuated to the max. Meghan Markle's also in it, which I now think's really weird. Yeah, in a very interesting scene, but I won't get into that. But that was like, I hate all of this so much. But it's surprising like how much you end up kind of weirdly caring about these characters because they make them so like likable. In the strangest of ways, you know, they make them like proper characters.
Yeah, they're all distinct.
And they're all so unique. And yeah, and you know how each of them are going to react to certain things and how they're going to react with each other. And there are those bait parts of these stories that make you, if you're sat there watching them, it makes you enjoy it. And the fact that they played with it as well, which made this kind of story even better for me. I also did kind of like the soundtrack as well and how that played into the satire. Yeah, there's a lot of elements that are enjoyable. I'll put it like that. I'm trying to look on my notes to see if I had really anything else to say.
Well, I've got stuff to say. I've still got stuff to say.
Let's hear it. Oh, I've still got some more. Let's pass the baton.
I'm curious as to how, I guess this is, so I mentioned this not really being a cult classic, but I guess it kind of is in the sense that it has stuck around. It's iconic. It is. And I think the music's part of that. Yeah. I think the fashion's a big part of that. I mean, the fashion you're seeing in this was actually like a bit of a turning point for like 90s culture.
Okay.
Because we're at this point, Nirvana's all the rage, grunge is already here, everyone's wearing baggy jeans and flannel shirts.
Yeah.
And then this film comes out with its, you know, hypercolor, you know, high fashion aesthetic. But it's 16 year old kids like dressed up like that. And it was hugely influential. And I think like when you think of 90s, sure you do think of the flannel and the grunge and all that stuff, but now I feel like the 90s stuff that's stuck around today in the world of fashion, and I'm not a massive fashion person, but I think it is those kind of aesthetics of the hyper colours and all this kind of stuff. And you know, like I was watching like a Alicia Silverstone interview, that's the actress who plays Cher, and she said like the outfits are like, you know, they're as much of a character in the film as anyone else, and she had like 70 different costumes, and as she said, like at the time she thought it was also stupid and she didn't understand what it was about, but upon reflection, like it's so obvious that it's all part of that like hyper real satirical nature of it. And
I love that little bit at the beginning where she gets up and she's like, oh, I've got got to get ready for school.
Oh, a little
and
computer.
She goes over to a little fucking computer, yeah, and it's like whether it matches or not. I was like, oh, this is brilliant. Like, fair
exactly.
play to them.
And this is what I mean. Like, if you watch that scene and you think this is it's trying to be like earnest,
a real, yeah,
you're a fool.
Exactly. I'm glad that they established that early on as well, because it really sets the rest of the movie up as like, you know what you're getting in for.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like the looks and the music and the lingo, all the little lines, you know, these things have, you know, they're not reflective of what actual high school was like at the time, I imagine. I mean, we weren't around for that because we were not born, nor were we there. but, you know, it is trying to be hyper-realistic. It's trying to present a hyper-reality.
Does it well.
Yeah. And I do think it genuinely builds an interesting world, you know?
Yeah, you kind of get sucked into it in a weird way.
Which I think is the key to the artistry of the chick flick, is that if you do it, you talked about like 90210, and like I vaguely remember watching that every now and again. And like that's all schlock, because I think on some level it's trying to be like earnest and take it seriously.
Yeah, definitely.
But the key to all that kind of melodramatic stuff is to be tongue-in-cheek and to be winky again.
It was a bit like...
This thing of
like,
self-awareness keeps coming up. And this is a good example of it, where this is so self-aware, it completely knows what it is. It's not trying to be more than what it is either, too, you know? And I think that's why I'm just so on board with it, because it's just so...
Yeah.
It's just so cohesive with itself.
Yeah, I guess like 90210 was like our Skins, you know, but it wasn't. The problem is, it was so like far gone in terms of exaggerating everything that it lost that kind of. Well, I guess you could say the same about Skins, but it lost all of its serious kind of tones of. You had to accept it as something, anything other than it trying than being something that's serious and could be considered so. But it did touch on like. Quite harsh themes from what I remember, but unfortunately because of that none of it landed. But that's about that show. It does still have that weird kind of trope of older people playing younger people.
Yeah, I was gonna bring this up,
which is like a huge thing in this kind of genre, where it's always weird that she's like, oh, I'm 16, and I'm like,
you know what, I would have,
you look nothing like a 16.
No, I would have bought, I think when the whole film I was watching, I'm like, they're like 18, they're like about to graduate, right? And then we're at the end when she says, oh, I'm 16, as if. I'm like, what?
Bollocks. They had that in 90210, actually. Like, they were all in their like late
20s. Their, like, 30s playing.
Like, they've all got like receding hairlines and stuff. They're playing like 18-year-old kids. It's like, what's going on here, man?
I know.
And the problem is that you'd go through like, especially with like series of this stuff, is that you go through like their high school years to the point in which they like leave high school and then they get jobs and stuff. And by that point, they're like pushing like 40 or something ridiculous like that. And it all just feels really off. So I've never really understood that. I guess like in a weird way, they didn't do that with TV shows like sitcoms that was less of a rom-com. Like I remember watching, we had Sky back when I was a kid, so I used to watch too much of iCarly and stupid shit like that. They were always quite young when they played it, so it felt a little bit more relatable, I suppose, at that age. Obviously, we were like younger from what they were on screen anyway. But it seems that all films have that nature of casting older people to play younger people, and even Paul Rudd here, he looks like he should be like he's coming on like dad age. Very young dad age.
Well,
you know what I mean?
No, he's quite baby. He's quite baby face. I mean, I could buy him as like, because he's meant to be like 18.
Well, he's quite
19.
Baby face now, you know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, he still looks the same.
It's just the nature of it. But then again, yeah, it is a weird part of it. It doesn't really matter so much with this film. Like, it didn't bother me at all because, like, it's a satire.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't even register to me until that ending. Where she says, I'm 16. I was like, wait.
Yeah.
You're what?
Bollocks.
You're what?
Excuse me? Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any final thoughts? Any final additions for Clueless?
In all fairness, I couldn't stop smiling when I was watching it. But that's probably because I imagined you sitting there watching it on your own as well. And also, and even more so now, knowing that you enjoyed it. But there's a. It is probably the best of the rom-coms that I've ever watched, because, as we've mentioned many times, it being a satire and that it establishes that so early on, it allowed me to sit back and be like, okay, let's see where they're going to go with this. And I enjoyed it because of it. Again, you can only take these reviews for these kind of films so far, because as soon as you start talking about the real depth of drama and stuff like that, you know, it's not the place for it. So you can't judge it too harshly.
Sure.
So I think the rating of it would be higher for me because of the fact that it's based within that genre. Like, this is like a, like this is like a 5-star of that genre. But in general, I think it's more like a, it sits around for me. Like, I enjoyed it, but, you know, I wouldn't watch it again. So it's kind of like a, I say it's like a 3-star, or pushing like a, maybe like a 3.5, 4, if being generous. Considering how well it deals with the genre and all the acting and just the how well written it surprisingly was.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm giving it a 4-star though.
Fair, yeah, going in with a 4.
I think it's just good. I just think it's like fucking solid. I don't know, like, you know, I would say it's perfect. I don't think it loses a bit of steam towards the end, and I do think they could have upped some of the satirical aspects of it. But it's stuck around. I think it stands the test of time weirdly. I think, you know, it is very very funny. I enjoy it. I love it. I think it's a great film.
Oh, that's quite sweet. So, I like that.
You know,
fair play.
And there's nothing, you know, and like there's nothing to be embarrassed about it. That, you know, I know it's like funny that, and I'm quite glad that we chose this one, because I would be wanting to pick something. I'd be wanting to pick something quite like feminine, to be honest, because we've covered a lot of like manly films about manly men, and we're gonna talk about that with your fucking film coming up next. But you know,
yeah, that's true. There's no shame in that balance.
There's no shame in something that's a bit, you know, a bit cheesy, a bit bubblegum, but you know, whatever. And I think Clueless
is that more, you know. Yeah, I'd like to do that more. You know, things like cartoons and things or like romance movies or things like this that wouldn't usually be covered on an area such as like a podcast in film, because you do have that nature sometimes where a lot of people start off a film called podcast and they're like, right, let's do all of the Christopher Nolan films and let's do like all of the Tarantinos, and it's like, well, yeah. You know, come on, let's have some range, and we're all for that. You know, as you can tell, we actually rather enjoyed this. So thanks for that recommendation.
Yeah, thank you.
From you guys. We'll definitely, if you want us to do some more weird, wacky ones, I think we'd, yeah, possibly prefer it, or, you know, just give it a blast. We're open to anything. Yeah. Clueless, a lot of fun. Surprising as that was.
So, Adam, what was your recommendation this week? What did you make me watch?
Yeah. Well, it was one of those films where I was made to watch it by my flatmate, and I went into it going, oh, do you know what? Actually, that's unfair to say that he made me watch it. I think we were both feeling a bit down. We wanted to watch a film, and he was like, oh, this is a great film. It will surprise you. And it did surprise me. It was a film called Warrior. It came out in 2011. It's directed by Gavin O'Connor, who did, Pride and Glory, and The Accountant. Yes. So very kind of high action movies, quite gritty. But basically this film it's essentially like a boxing film. But it follows like the youngest son of an alcoholic former boxer, and also his brother, who's being trained by his father for a competition in mixed martial arts, in a huge tournament. And the lead character, played by Joel Edgerton, Brendan, he essentially is the classic guy who's family man, but he's ran into financial difficulties and can't pay for his home, and sees this competition and for whatever reason decides that the £5 million pot at the end of it is the best way for him to get around his financial difficulties. But what we don't know as an audience, spoiler alert, because they don't make this very clear at the beginning, but they actually enter the same tournament, him and his brother. And because of their father and him being an alcoholic, they were kind of split up as kids and have quite a lot of resentment for each other because of also their relationship with their mother. So it's all kind of a bit, you know, well, we've got a lot of family situ going on here. But the other brother, Tommy, are played by Tom Hardy. He's a lot more kind of a stoic kind of figure. He was in the Marines. It's a bit, I will say this movie is a bit kind of, a bit cliche in areas. And I was expecting that due to the fact that it was of its genre. You know, this is like a boxing movie and a lot of it falls similar to Clueless in, within its genre. There's a lot of cliches that it can fall into of its own genre. So you think of films like Rocky and stuff like that. And that film does have this, like, I feel a lot of the scenes that you see in this, a lot of the characters, situations that it builds for itself does have a lot of those kind of, oh, we've seen this before. But what I kind of loved about it was, and what shocked me when I watched it with my flatmate was its heart and its acting and relationship that it built amongst the two brothers with each other and also their father, which I felt was kind of very heartwarming, very well done. And I ended up actually enjoying a film about boxing, basically, which I wasn't expected to, because I don't really like those kind of movies, I guess. I don't know, I don't really gel with them very well. Or haven't at least enjoyed things like Rocky and stuff. It just doesn't really interest me. But Alex, more importantly, what did you think?
Yeah, so...
it was a bit of a gamble, me giving this to you, because...
Yeah, I'm quite curious as to
I think we both
why you wanted to talk about it. I think is kind of the biggest puzzle I'm having with it. I think it won
mostly.
I'll let you say your piece. To say it's cliche, I think it's an understatement. It's very, very extremely contrived. It's got all the tropes that you expect from these kind of movies. You know, oh, I can't afford to pay the house. Oh, the alcoholic father. Oh, brothers. Oh no. Oh, the kid's sick. Oh, the only way we're gonna save the house is if I fight. Oh, the wife doesn't want him to. Oh no. And it's very of its time and some of its directing and stuff. I would agree that the kind of performances I think are doing a lot of the backbone, you know, lifting, carrying of the film. I think the more I think about it, the less I like it. It did kind of win win me over towards the end, but I think it's far too long. I think it takes far too long to get to the good kind of drama of the film. Although I did like how they navigated the fighting aspect of it, and there was something very cathartic about it. And I guess because they do the bare minimum, that's why I kind of ended up on board with it. But yeah, I'm kind of curious as to what your thoughts are on it more.
Sure. So my two cents of it was, one of the reasons why I suggested it, because a lot of you don't know, but what tends to happen is that we get so engrossed with like reviews of films, it comes to the point in which we recommend and then a film to each other, and then we're like, oh shit, what have I seen recently? So this was one of them for me, because I'd only watched it a few hours prior. I think the reason why I recommended it was simply due to the fact that it surprised me. I was in one of those moods that you get in where you're just scrolling through Netflix and maybe you get recommended a film, or maybe you see like a reviews for a film that surprises you. And I don't like boxing movies. I don't like things like Rocky. I find them very boring and sometimes cliche. And that's just generally my opinion on it. It doesn't mean it's right or whatever. Because a lot of people like those movies. They like the kind of like high thrill and the adrenaline, the action of like boxing and the way that's kind of filmed. Because of that, I went into this movie expecting so little, but then actually there are parts of it that I did enjoy. And I think it was enough of a merit on their acting for me to bring it up and just interestingly have a conversation about it. Because as far as boxing movies goes, this is one of the better ones that I've seen. So Nick Nolte, who plays the father, I think did a fantastic job. There are a lot of scenes where it was quite emotional for me, to be honest. You know, there are things in my own life with family and things like alcohol and stuff like this, addiction, that in the way that it was acted, I was kind of like, wow, that's very, it came from a place where I was like, wow, that's obviously, they've put a lot of respect into doing this. I think that a lot of my reaction to it being better than I expected was a lot of the reason why I, probably think it's better than it actually is, but I did really enjoy the central relationship, albeit cliche, and I felt the acting was pretty good as well.
So when you say the central relationship, which one do you mean?
There's between like two, the brother, and there are definitely strong, the one that I preferred was the relationship between that the two brothers had in conjunction with the father, because I think that their relationship with their father is what kind of pushed the movie forward a bit, mm-hmm. especially with the ending. I think a lot of like this film is essentially way too long, because the most interesting part of it is when they actually start fighting, and there's a lot of a really unnecessary build up beforehand that didn't need to be there.
It takes an hour for them to actually meet.
Yeah, and it's like, why is that needed?
Which, to kind of praise it a bit, I think is a kind of a bold choice. Because the whole movie, I'm going, when are they going to cross paths? When are they going to interact? When are we going to figure out what the core of this drama is? And I do kind of like its restraint in that area, and the fact that it wants to establish their individual lives and their individual relationships. But my problem is it's also contrived that I just don't really care. You know, there's a whole thing where
that's fair,
Hardy, you know, he comes back to his dad and agrees to train him, and he's very standoffish with him, and there's this whole thing about him taking pills and drinking that just gets completely dropped. He goes, okay, yeah, fine, I'm done with pills, and that's never like an element of the story ever again. And then with Joel Edgerton's character, like his wife's like, no, don't box, I don't want you to box, I don't want you to do it, I don't want you to do it. And then when it comes to the match, she's like, woo, yeah, fuck him up, you know? Like, there's a lot of stuff like that where I'm like, okay, I don't know if we needed this. And like, I would always say this, we're in the easy chair. And I see what they're going for.
Definitely.
A film that this was weirdly reminding me of was Place Beyond the Pines, in the way that it's trying to explore like different two characters who are on different sides, and we understand both of them, and we understand you know, and I think that is interesting, and I think maybe they could have done more with that idea, I think is the issue for me. I think the problem is that the real interesting drama is this thing of we like both of them, and we both want them to win, and we both want them to succeed, but we also don't want them to come to conflict with one another. And I feel like the film puts on the back burner for too long, and then when we get there, it feels a little bit underbaked, despite the great work they do despite it being cliche, to set up their individual respective lives and to paint this kind of backstory and this kind of family tragedy, which I think is elevated by the performances. I think Tom Hardy's excellent in this, surprisingly. Well, not surprisingly, because he's excellent. And Nick Nolte's great, and Joel Edgerton's fine. I feel like he's just like, kind of like, I don't know, he's fine. He's doing good enough. And that's the thing with this film. That's like kind of how I feel about it in general. Like, it does enough.
Good enough.
It does enough to make me like be on board with it. But I don't know, man. The more I like really think about it, and the more I'm like, that was stupid movie.
Yeah,
which is reductive, and I'm trying not to like be shitty to it. I just find it not very compelling, I think, is the problem. I think it's so contrived that unless you have a very personal relationship to some of the themes and stuff, maybe it's just not that compelling.
I mean, even then, you know, I do have like a personal relationship with some of the themes. One of the reasons why I like Place Beyond the Pines was because it had a very good conflict around fatherhood and consequence. And this touches on that a bit, but it is generally because it surprised me so much. I didn't expect so much of that to come through in a story like this. And again, the most interesting parts of this, which I felt a lot of like tension with, was when they came together at the end in this fight and how it kind of resolved. And it's a shame, really, because that last kind of 40 minutes is the best part of the film, and possibly because of that left me on a lot more of a positive note than perhaps I would feel visiting this a second time. But I did enjoy it. I enjoyed the relationships it built. I think Tom Hardy was great. I think he was, again, he was, as he usually does, he is quite mysterious in this role. Once you think that he's going to act one way, he seems to act another way. But unfortunately, that's like never really too well kind of dived into.
Yeah, this is kind of like the most Tom Hardy role I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
you're
going to be this big brute. And I mean, Tom Hardy, you know, he is a specimen.
He is massive in this film.
He is a fucking beast. His traps look like they're about to fucking burst out of his neck.
There's like a scene where he literally walks into the ring and he knocks the guy out like that. And you kind of feel it and you're like...
Yeah, and he totally fits the animalistic, you know, nature of the character. And it's that idea of like all this pent-up anger and emotion that's underneath the surface that comes to the front when they're in the fights, which, you know, works. But then also I feel like Tom Hardy's like he's an interesting character actor as well. It's something that like people don't really always consider about him, and like it's kind of, I don't know,
It feels a bit of a wasted role on him, to be honest. Like, I think he brings a lot to it, but there's not really a lot.
There's not much for him to work with.
No, I don't think so.
There was kind of like this really contrived kind of backstory about, which was another cliche about, like, you know, being in the Marines basically makes you superhuman. And it's like this whole weird, convoluted backstory that they try and fit into the plot. And the story of this is just really weird, but I had a lot of fun with it. All the boxing elements and the finale, I just thoroughly enjoyed. And I have no idea why, really.
I guess, like, there is something extremely cathartic about the fighting. And I think when the film was actually being really well directed is during those scenes. They sell the sense of scale of the arena and the brutality of the fighting. And there is some very, like, you know, early 2010s action editing in there, a lot of shaky cam, a lot of very quick like succession cuts. But then there were some little flourishes that I liked. I liked like the use of like crash zooms when people were getting impacted into the floor and stuff. That felt very you know, effective.
It was impactful.
And that's also like when the film looks the best, because a lot of it look again, it's very obvious era in the way it looks. A lot of it is very ugly, I find.
It's very gloomy, yeah.
You know, that kind of Zack Snyder-y, muted palette, high contrast thing. It's just, it doesn't, it's whenever they're under like artificial light, you know, when they're in like the cafe. And
it's really like high highlights and like really dark shadows.
It looks
shadows.
Like what real life does not look like at all.
yeah, it's very unnaturalistic.
To
for the sake of style, which is a shame, because in this setting especially, you can make really kind of stunning like pieces with the light that you have. I have shot actually scenes in boxing before. In those settings, you have a lot of like really strong fluorescence above like boxing rings. And then you have like at certain times of day, you have a lot of natural light come through the window. But interestingly enough, there's no like lamps or anything usually, because none of it really matters. It just really matters that you could just kind of, it can make your head go a bit whirly, because you go into a lot of these places and it's just like lighting where it needs to be, and it's all very like very sharp. So when I ever shot anything like this, I only ever, you've used like one light to just boost that natural light a bit, and it looks pretty. And I was kind of sad that they didn't do that more. Obviously they're not in the boxing ring and training for a lot of it. Even then they try to make it feel like that, and they make it really kind of dark, and I guess you could say that that's part of the tone of it, but then the tone's a bit all over the place. I thought it's also important, you know, when I recommended this movie, as we spoke literally earlier about it, you know, it's not always important to recommend something that you love. I'm not saying that I either love or hated this movie. I felt that it was different enough from its other pieces within the genre, because I've seen like Rocky and I've seen Creed, and I feel like a lot of the heart and behind it kind of takes a bit of a back burner. And I know a lot of people, if they like those films, are going to be very angry at me saying that, because I get where the heart of those movies comes from. I just felt that this movie did a little bit better because it allowed more time with it.
Yeah, I was surprised at how compelling some of it was, despite how contrived it was. Like, I know I'm sounding quite down on it. I did enjoy it, I think I did like it overall. I think that is kind of because like the last 40 minutes are the best part of the film.
Yeah, literally, it leaves you with a good taste in your mouth. But then the more you think about the build up to it,
I think it's just a shame that it takes so long to get there, and it's full of all the kind of classic stuff that you'd expect from the story. You brought up like the thing of like consequence, and I think that's like an issue with it. Like, I feel like it doesn't really deal with.
There's not many,
For a film where the plot is, the story is about this kind of aftermath of something that happened a long time ago, and these two men kind of grappling with that, it doesn't seem to really care about, like, the consequence of, you know, like, what happens after, I guess, you know? And, like, sometimes that can be quite just, like, nitpicky and stupid, but I feel like a lot, like, the film spends so much time, like, setting up the stakes, right? And then when you kind of get to that finale, it doesn't really matter. So I don't know.
Because all that really matters is who's going to win. I guess that's what's so weird about it. And I guess it attempts to make you really care emotionally about these characters. But unfortunately, like, you know, Tom Hardy, like, although he does a good performance in this role, there's not much like you really care about him with, because you don't know a lot about him. He's very much kind of behind a brick wall. And all the other characters try and pick something out of him. So you're like, although I get where he's coming from because other people have told me, like, you haven't gone on much of a journey with him. And, and on the other side of the pond, it's like, yeah, and I'd say it's the same, pretty much all cliches.
And I'd say the same with Joel Edgerton's character, where it's like, you're such a walking cliche, you're just this stoic family man. And that's why, I kind of alluded to this at the start, like, this, like, this whole thing of, this is just like a manly man film about two men being manly men, and oh, they've got manly men issues, and the only way they can fix their men issues is by being manly, and it's like,
and fighting.
Yeah, and I don't know.
Well, that's what I feel about a lot of, like, films like Rocky and stuff. Like,
I say it's got more depth than something like essential, that, yeah.
That's what I mean.
But it, like, still is.
I expect it to be only that.
Yeah, but if you really scrutinize it, it does boil down to, like,
yeah,
manly bro, you know, my little brother, like, I don't know. And I guess I just,
and at the same time, though, yeah, at the same, it doesn't really match Clueless in the sense that, because Clueless is like a satire of that genre, but when you go into these movies, I guess you expect those cliches a bit. It's why I don't really watch them. But then I felt that the kind of warmth behind it, and especially because there were issues there that I attached myself with, there was something more to this movie that I felt it needed to be credited for. And yeah, but it's, in terms of, like,
a lot of people love this. I was like, when I was looking
that's what I was shocked about as well.
Looking at, like, reviews, like, I see a lot of people were generally, like, really positive about it. And I guess, like, and I see a lot of guys who were going, like, yeah, this is my, like,
it's a masterpiece.
My top five films of all time. And I'm like, really?
Okay.
Okay, interesting. And, like, you know, I'm not shitting on that. Like, I don't want to shit on that at all. Like, if you really love this, then awesome. But I guess it just didn't really speak to me.
No.
Not that, like, I have any disinterest in its subject matter, though. Like, if I don't know if you've ever seen, like, proper UFC-style, you know, MMA fighting. It's intense and it's visceral and it's very cinematic. You know, I can see why. We used to have at my old job, like, we had fight nights, we had, like, MMA nights, and with the cage and everything. And yeah, there's an artistry to that sport, and exploring the psychology of the kind of characters who would get involved with that is inherently interesting. It's just a shame that, like, films like Rocky, I suppose, like you mentioned, have, like, set the, have like a standard template that all these other films seem to follow. And I think when I was thinking of, like, Place Beyond the Pines, I'm thinking how that narrative is subversive, you know. It tells quite a linear story, but it's very subversive in the way it does it, and I wanted this to be doing something like that. I wanted it to, you know, change perspective more, or I don't know, anything, just be a bit more creative with it, because it is very, very contrived, and I think it's such an arrow in the knee for it, considering that it is surprisingly heartfelt. And it is surprisingly engaging when you do get there. But yeah.
But it's that journey to that point that I kind of definitely wish it was more well developed and done in those ways. But yeah, I'm glad you picked those points out. It's a very interesting movie because of it, in my opinion. Hence why I wanted to talk about it. Overall, I've got a rating down here, but what would you call it?
I gave it a 3-star on my letterbox, but honestly, the more I thought about it, like, the more I just kind of dislike it. I think it's probably a 2.5 overall. I know I'm, like, kind of splitting hairs, but I think it's fine. I think if you like the genre, I guess, then definitely check it out. It's not really my thing. It wasn't really touching my heart in the way that I think it wants it to. And I don't know if that's just because it's aged a bit badly. I don't know if... I don't know. I think there's a lot of problems going on there. But it is definitely interesting. And it was enjoyable, which is why, like, I kind of, like, would maybe say budget more to, like, 3-star. Because I do think it's good, weirdly. Despite having, like, a lot of reservances about it. But
yeah, I've got here 3.5, 3. Because of the nature of its genre and the fact that I don't really gel with it too well, but it's enough. I think the credit is due that because it's one of those movies I expected not to enjoy, there's enough there within it that kind of touched my heart enough to be like, this is different. And I did have a lot of fun with this movie as soon as it got to its main kind of, you know, juicy core at the end. And I think it's worth a watch in general if you like these kind of movies, just simply for that bit. The ending was very satisfying for me, but yeah, 3.5, 3, I think that's fair. I think it's an interesting genre to kind of navigate anyway, but I felt that this is one of the more impressive ones, at least. But yeah, it's a really interesting conversation because a lot of people do rate it as like this masterpiece. I mean, overall on IMDb, it's got an 8 out of 10. So,
oh my God.
You know, when I looked it up, I was like, shit, people really love this movie. And that's what got me thinking about it because, you know, rewatching it again before we did this, I was like, yeah, what is it that people are pulling from it, like that really, really gets them? And that's why I felt like I needed to talk about this idea that there is something there that's more than these other movies that people have latched on to. And personally, I did latch on to a lot of like how the fatherhood part of it was navigated. And yeah, it was certainly interesting to discuss. But yeah, that was Warrior, folks.
It was Warrior.
Okay. Very interesting. It's been a hell of a swing of an episode.
It's been an interesting one, yeah. But two very different films.
Absolutely.
Well,
it was fun though.
What have you got for me next time?
So this is a film that we spoke a bit the other weeks about, my thoughts on cinematography and what movies kind of weirdly fascinate me or confuse me or stick in my mind as pieces that were so different that it stayed for me like for a very long time. There was one that I've seen recently due to a recommendation called Playtime by Jacques Tati, and it was he's a French director, and it has a very interesting discussion about him making this movie, quite similar to how you felt about Stalker.
Yeah,
this is an interesting discussion behind its production. Yeah. But this film is so, so strange in the way that it's shot and what it's trying to say, and also considered his kind of magnum opus. But it's a really interesting discussion, so I wanted to recommend it to you. Have you seen it at all?
No, but very spookily, I was going to recommend it. It was one of the ones I was considering.
Oh, wow.
Very spooky. Excellent. I think it got like a re-release recently, so a lot of people are talking about it. And also, I think a friend recommended it to me too. Okay, cool. Awesome.
Excellent.
Excited.
What have you got for me?
What have I got for you? I want to just talk about something weird, something that I've been wanting to watch for a long time. I was just scrolling through my letterbox trying to figure out what I need to watch. I want to watch House by Nobuhiko Ubayashi. I think that's how you say it. I'm probably butchering a bit. It's a Japanese okay. horror film from the 70s. I know it's pretty bizarre. and I'm interested to just watch something weird. Just watch something weird and talk horror a bit.
Yeah.
Because it is a horror movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, cool. We've chosen two very strange films by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I had that same vibe of watching In Clueless and Warrior, and I was like, I want to go a lot further and just do something that's quite weird and out there and strange.
Okay.
But there you go. House and Playtime. Yeah. Thanks for tuning in, fellas. Go on, Alex, hit us with those notes.
Thanks for listening, as always. If you like what you heard here, you can go to twitter.com/FinalDraftShow, where I Instagram @FinalDraftPod. You can email us @FinalDraftPodcast@gmail.com. We're also at Facebook @TheFinalDraftPodcast.
This is awful.
If you go to the socials, there's a link to the Discord. Please join the Discord. It's very lonely.
Taking
in there,
the headphones
and I want
off.
Friends to talk to. If you enjoy the show for some goddamn reason, you can pay £5 a month for the writer's room, get a bonus episode, comes out first of
each
month.
Make sure this is the bit that's clear.
Listen, folks, okay, I'm just gonna say this as well, okay? You know, the bonuses, just the patron money just goes to paying for the hosting service. Right now we have enough patrons to cover it,
which is insane.
The more people...
So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It is greatly appreciated. If more people sign up for it, I will just lower the overall price because it will pay for itself. And, you know, we don't have many stuff that we need to save up for at the moment. Of course, if we do earn more, it can go towards projects and promoting the show and all that kind of stuff. So just throwing it out there, not trying to twist your arm or anything. But, you know, if more people join the Patreon... then I will reduce the overall price of it. Because, you know, it's doing its job. And I don't want to be too greedy. So, you know, just a thought.
Cool.
Just a thought. Next week, we're going to talk about Cruella. We've already recorded it. So look forward to that. If you've seen that.
Bloody hell, yeah.
We had a very tepid discussion about Cruella.
yeah, very interesting.
But some interesting discussion about modern filmmaking.
Yeah, so your next ones are Playtime and House, or Houseu. Yeah, cool. Thanks for listening. Go away. Be gone. I'm done with you.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you again.
Bye.